Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, it's Mark Jones here again, once again with the Ice Cream for the Soul Blog Talk Radio Show, and I'm very happy this week to be speaking to my friend Alison Sutton, who's based in Glastonbury and in the UK, and she's a three-principles coach. And I spoke to Alison probably about a year ago, pretty less than a year ago now. We had a Skype chat, and people who listen to me speak know that I'm very interested in not only the three principles and yoga, but also self-inquiry and the non-dual teachings, particularly of a guy named Muji. And Alison was been following Muji as well, and she wanted to have a quick chat with me, so we had a chat about Muji. And, well, I put a post on Facebook last week, and Alison commented on it. She goes, "Oh, I'd like to have a chat with you." And then, so I've been chatting with her briefly now, and I said, "Oh, why don't we just record this conversation?" So here we are. Welcome, Alison.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So, well, lovely to speak to you on the ice cream, as it were. So, well, you were just telling me about... Well, would you like to just tell people... You've heard me do these conversations before. Would you like to tell people a little about you before we dive into things?
Okay.
Your journey so far?
Yeah. So, a little bit about me... It sounds strange to say about me now, isn't it?
Yeah.
The conversation is about the losing me. But I've been a three principles coach for about the last year. And whilst doing that, I've been doing my own self-inquiry, working with a coach and unpicking myself, if you like. So whilst helping other people to... see the nature of who they truly are, I've been also deepening myself. And I kind of deepened to a point that I never thought I could get to, which has been quite exciting.
So, I'm sure people have got an idea what you mean by self-inquiry, and of course I know because I've been doing the same myself, but just for people who perhaps haven't heard that term, how would you word what that is, self-inquiry?
So self-inquiry for me has been, and it started off with an unpicking of everything that I thought that the I called Alison Sutton was. So looking at all of the kind of rules and regulations and values that I was living by that I had started to see were just all made up, and that I could make something else up completely differently and life would change and I could live by those for a while. So that was kind of how it started. Mm-hmm. And then it went deeper with the more Muji that I was watching and a non-duality group that I joined. And when I joined the non-duality group, I was pointed to watching Lisa Cairns and Roger Castillo, who I know you've interviewed. And non-duality, I guess in essence, for anybody who doesn't know, it's about an abiding in stillness of source consciousness without a sense of the personal self. And it's kind of an unpicking of the sense of I as an individual encased in a body, which kind of dissolves the need to understand and manipulate circumstances in our lives in order that we feel safe and we can just have an acceptance that it's life happening. Mm. So that's kind of how I see non-duality.
Mm. Well, that was a very nice description of it, yeah. Better than I would have stumbled.
You're not.
So, well, we spoke, Alice and I spoke briefly before we actually started recording. Would you just like to tell people, well, you've been on a journey for a while now, and then you decided to do some meditation as well. And you just set yourself a goal of doing, a goal is probably the wrong term, I don't know, but doing 2 hours meditation for 2 weeks. And I know some people in the three principles world are going, oh, you don't need to meditate. But I'm just curious, why did that seem important to you to do that?
It seems important. I was actually inspired by somebody called Kyle Cease, who was doing 100 days of 2 hours a day. And I was watching the experiences that he was having. I think he called it something like evolving out loud or something like that.
Right.
And I could see the kind of the principles working through that, the three principles working through that. And I was just inspired. I had a couple of weeks off over Christmas and I thought, I'm just going to give this a go. But it wasn't so much about meditating. It was more about sitting in silence.
Mm.
So that I would kind of sit and I would wait for what I've come to call now as the narrator. So the narrator in my mind who's running the story and the thought. So I would wait for that to settle and to stop. And then I would just sit in the silence.
Mm.
So it was about really going to that place where there was no thinking. So that was kind of my reason for doing it. And at the same time, lots of other things had sort of started to drop away as well. As I was looking more and more at my beliefs and realizing that I was doing things habitually, more things were kind of falling away. So I became vegan. I was halfway through drinking a glass of Prosecco and I looked at it and I thought, why am I still doing this? I don't even really like it.
That's not falling away from me yet. No.
don't meditate for 2 hours a day and then you'll be all right. It was more about all the things that I'd been doing habitually,
yeah,
without thinking about, had just kind of stopped happening, really.
Mm.
Yeah. So that was what was going on.
I really like what you said about how you worded it with the silent sitting, because in these days, unfortunately, as people hear the term meditation, it's automatically, well, not everybody, but a lot of people relate it to religion almost, so they maybe think of Buddhism, and there's so much negativity around, unfortunately, there's so much negativity, or quite a lot of negativity around religion because of the names that are done, the things that are done in the name of religion. So I liked what you said about silent sitting. It's nothing to do with religion as such, is it? It's just giving yourself space to just be quiet.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no religious connotations. Neither was it a guided journey, because that's another thing that people think of when they think of meditation.
Yes.
It's a way of keeping the mind busy, really, or relaxing, yeah, the mind. This was really, for me, just nothingness. I just wanted silence,
mm,
just to see what arose out of that silence.
Mm. And did you have any, because for a fact that I went to the silent retreat with Muji, and yeah, even though it's called silent retreat, they're quite noisy actually, because he's doing a lot of talking and there's a lot of question and answers. So it's not as silent as people may imagine. But there was actually 2 full days where there was silence. And I've always struggled with the meditation. I kind of, like you said, the inner narrator. Many people find it very noisy when the experience trying to be quiet. And I was no stranger to my noisiness. So I'm just, did you find it difficult or to sit quietly for 2 hours? Did you do it all in one go or did you in an hour?
Yeah, some days I did it all in one go. Other days, right, it'd be an hour or half an hour. And Yeah, I did find it difficult at first. You know, sort of the first, if I was going to do a long session, the first sort of 10, 15, 20 minutes, it was still a lot of thinking coming. You know, all the usual things like, why am I wasting my time doing this? I could be doing something else. know, all of that kind of thing. But because I decided just to do it for 2 weeks, I mean, I hadn't gone for the whole 100 being doable.
Yeah.
So because of that, I just persevered. Persevered with it. And I'm really glad that I did, actually.
Well, you said there was quite a few things arose from, well, I don't think it was just that, but I think obviously it was probably part of that. Would you like to talk about some of your experiences that you've been having, perhaps during or afterwards?
Yeah, sure. So I think the first thing that came to me from the silence was this just this feeling of being completely at one with everything. So there was no separation between me and other people, and an understanding, you know, kind of more deeply about living in the experience of my thinking, and that there was nothing that could hurt me other than my own thoughts. And that was just such a wonderful moment, because I realized that because there wasn't this personal I, because I deconstructed that over a period of some time, and it felt so free that I just had this knowing that there was nothing that could hurt me.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was kind of the first kind of thing that arose from the stillness, that just felt this wonderful, glorious level of freedom of knowing that.
Yeah.
But then the next night, I woke up in the middle of the night and I was absolutely terrified, because I woke up and there was only three things in that moment that I knew about myself. I knew that I lived in a house, and I knew that I lived in Glastonbury, and I knew that I'd given birth to two people, was how that came to me in the experience. But other than that, I couldn't find anything else about who I was. There was just nothing there, just this total dissolving of my personal identity. It had just gone. And I thought, God, I'm losing my mind. Of course, I had. I had lost my mind. I felt so alone and so scared. And in the darkness dawned on me that, as well as the wonderful realization that there was nothing that could hurt me, that also meant there was nothing outside of me that could help me either. And I could see my body on the bed, but I was looking at it from outside of my body, and I was watching like these little will-o'-the-wisps of energy leaving my body, and it was as if I was trying to get out of the window that was open. It was the most bizarre thing.
Right.
And I was
like, almost like an out-of-body experience, would you say?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
out-of-body
experience. Because I could see my body, as I say, on the bed and see this energy. These energy trails just leaving.
Yeah.
So I cried myself to sleep. I just felt so scared, so alone. I hadn't got a clue what was happening to me. And then I had a dream. And in this dream, I was driving to see clients. And then I remembered that I was supposed to be somewhere else. So I turned my car around. And I realized in this dream that I wasn't really present with what was happening. So I brought myself back to the present moment. I can still see it now, actually. And I just saw the beauty and the perfection of everything. And in seeing that beauty, my car started coming off the road, and it was flying through the air towards a lake. And I knew that I was about to drown and die. And I tried to call out for help, but no voice would come out. And I knew that there was no one to hear me either. That was how it seemed at the time. that there was no one else other than me. I just felt like it was just me in this world. There was nobody else. Mm-hmm. And I woke up. And I, as I said to you just now, I experienced a death that night. That is really how it felt, that it felt like part of me and everything that I had known about myself and everything that I thought I was literally died that night. And it was terrifying. It was absolutely terrifying. And the next day I was a complete emotional wreck, as you can imagine. And I had to go into work. And I was thrown straight into a meeting with an electrician on site with a shop refurbishment project that I'm doing, something else that I do.
Yeah.
And it was just the most, I was just in this bizarre place. I sat down to use my computer and I couldn't remember how to use my computer. I couldn't remember how to do things that I'd been doing for years and years. And it was like part of my memory had been wiped out. Everything was new and it all felt like a struggle. It was just, yeah. It was just bizarre. And I went home at lunchtime and I Skyped a friend and he talked me through a process of connecting with my inner child. So, which of course was me connecting with myself and comforting myself and telling her that everything would be all right. And yeah. But, you know, just to be with the process. He was the non-duality teacher, actually.
Okay.
So it was incredibly comforting to hear somebody who'd been through a similar experience telling me that it was all going to be okay when I got to the other end.
So, right.
And that night after I finished work, I went to the supermarket and I was walking around in this kind of half awake, half asleep, completely confused state, looking at all the other shoppers thinking, you don't know, you're not real, do you? And it was the first time I've been into a supermarket since I've been vegan and not drinking alcohol as well.
Right.
And all I could see was this sea of processed food. And I've given up sugar too. And all I could see was sugar and alcohol, and I was thinking, God, these substances just dumb down the human consciousness driven by the emotional need to have something to make us feel better. That was how it was all looking.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was just this bizarre kind of reality, walking around a supermarket looking at people as if they were the odd ones.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I can relate to a lot of what you've said in what you're saying over the last few minutes. And it was interesting that you had that. Is it, well, there's quite a few things that struck me when you said you realised there was nothing that you could hurt you. Mm. And Sid Banks has got that, which is quite a very well-known quote that I've heard him say a few times, where he said there's nothing on the outside that can hurt you. And there's nothing on the outside that can help you because there is no outside.
Oh, really? I haven't read that quote. That's interesting.
Yeah. So, oh, well, that's interesting. Even more interesting to say you've not heard that before. So I know I'm probably asking you to try and explain the unexplainable here, but would you like to try and talk about that? What you mean by that? There is nothing. Because I know and you talked about realizing the perfection of everything. I think people who listen to me waffle on, I quite often talk about that moment where I had a brief moment of realizing that myself, that everything was perfect.
Mm.
But I'm probably asking too many questions now, but can we start off what you mean by nothing can hurt you? Could you try and help? Imagine somebody's got no idea what we're talking about and you're trying to explain to them what you mean by that.
Okay, so when I had that realization, it was the realization that I was all there was. And it's not a personal I, it's just that there is no separation between to this kind of body-mind concept called Alison Sutton is, and everything else. Mm. So the whole of life is just all there is. And so if I was looking at it in terms of still thinking of myself as an individual, at that time it felt like it was just me. And so I had kind of personalized it, that it was me that was God, and it was me that was everything,
mm.
and me that was spirit, and it was me that was the whole of life. So that's why it felt like there was nothing that could hurt me, because I was still kind of very central to the experience, if you like. I mean, since then, which I'll explain about probably in a minute, you know, I see it completely differently now, that it's as consciousness. Consciousness yeah. is everything and nothing at the same time.
Yeah.
But at that time, I was still kind of personalizing it to me. So the words that Sid said, it was exactly that. It was as if there was nothing outside. There was nothing other than me in that moment.
Right. Me as in the greater me.
Yeah, but still with a sense that it was, or still with a feeling that it was me, Alison Sutton. So
okay.
You know, I hadn't kind of gone further on in the unfolding at that point. Yeah, it just felt like this kind of amazing place that there was nothing outside me.
Right. So that it probably leads very much on to then, and then you realise the perfection of everything. So would you like to try and explain what you mean by that?
Yeah, some years ago, I had an experience similar to I had in the dream of kind of slipping in. At the time, it felt like I was slipping into an altered state of consciousness where I was just seeing the absolute beauty in everything, and that whatever was decaying and dying was still beautiful because that was the natural order of things, and that I could see the connection of myself to the blades of grass, to the trees, to the flowers, to the birds. Everything just had this amazing, vibrant, this is without drugs, by the way, amazing, vibrant colours and sounds, and that no matter what was happening, everything was perfect. It was exactly as it was meant to be. And I was seeing people behind their kind of constructs of who they were and seeing the beauty. When I had the felt experience of it, when it actually happened, not in the dream, I knew at that moment that if I'd have had a mass murderer on one side of me and a rapist on the other side of me, that I could still love them because I was just so in love with everything, and everything and everybody was perfect. They were just motivated to do behaviours out of a misguided sense of who they were. So I guess it's the perfection of everything, really, that I was seeing, both in the dream and when I had the felt experience of it as well. So that's what it means to me. What does it mean to you?
Well, you've probably put it into words very, very much clearer than I could have done. But what you just said then, and this can sometimes rub people up the wrong way, what you just said, for example, about the murder and the rapist,
mm-hmm.
I can't take people's unconsciousness seriously these days. And when I say unconsciousness, I mean when people are angry or when people are committing acts that could be labelled as bad. And I'm not condoning that acts like that. Just for example, just on the personal level, I just see it's that people they're identified with the individual aspect of themselves, the egoic mind, the limited belief of who they actually are. And I'm just saying, I just thought you said that very clearly. I say it to, it sounds cheesy, but lately, when people talk about love. I think that is one of the clearest words to point to who we actually are. And it's funny, I have some, as I'm saying that, I've got a couple of my friends who are not interested in this at all, and they see some of my Facebook posts. And when I go, for example, yesterday I went for a beer with them, and I do get the mickey taken out of me, but I just let it be. But it's now, these days, it's like water off a duck's back. But I really do see that that is the foundation. If when people rest in that place, or come to a place of just being and not judging the moment, and things too much, life too much, life's unfolding. I'm seeing the more opportunity arises for people to understand what's being talked about right now. If people don't understand what we're talking about, I don't know if that was a bit of a convoluted, jumbled up answer. Did that make sense to you, Alison?
Yeah, no, it does make sense to me actually. And the love part was kind of the next part of the process for me. You know, I'd gone through the kind of the terror, but then I experienced the love. I woke up one morning, a day or so later, after, you know, I'd kind of had the night.
Yeah.
And it felt like my heart had burst open and I was in love with everything and everybody. It was like I was experiencing it as a magical child. You know, without, you know how a child can just be so in love with the moment because they've got nothing going on.
Yeah.
It was like that kind of it, and I just felt so complete within myself. It was just the most, I think the more you can, it's a place to go to. It's not somewhere that you have to, something you have to try and do. It's just a way of being.
Yes.
And the more we being that, then everything just kind of looks curious. So even when people are ranting or shouting, it just kind of looks a bit curious and odd.
Yes.
Because there's nobody claiming anything out of the experience of it.
No, not making meaning of it.
No, exactly, yeah.
Yeah. No, there's something came to me and then it just jumped out of my mind. I was going to say something. Let me just see if it comes back to me. No, well, it's not coming, but I just going back to that perfection of what we said mentioned before, that was, again, for me, that was just, I couldn't even put any words on it. It was just, when my moment, it was just a real deep knowing of everything's perfect. But of course, from an intellectual point of view, that doesn't make sense because we've got, like you said before, there's, we see decay and unconsciousness, and we see that as being wrong. But in some ways, it's just all part of the unfolding of life, isn't it? It's like there's as well as the sunshine, there's a rain, and we tend to label rain. Of course, not everybody labels rain bad, but I'm just probably a poor metaphor. But we've got labels. We seem to label everything, don't we? Without realizing everything is ultimately.
Yeah, it is just life happening.
Mm.
Absolutely.
Mm. So, how has this affected your coaching then over the last, since you've been having this? I'm just curious how this is.
Well, I mean, there's kind of.
Changed at all? Or?
Yeah, it's changed totally. And that kind of links in with what you were just saying, actually, that there are no words for it. And the reason there are no words for it is because it doesn't come from the intellect.
No.
So it doesn't come from the thinking mind. It comes from an embodied experience. So when I've been coaching since this happened, I've literally just allowed myself to drop out of my mind. So rather than in the past, I might have been thinking, you know, what should I say next and what might be relevant and what are they thinking and what should I point them to next? I've just completely stopped doing that now. Just drop down into my body and go into that quiet space. And from there, it is just effortless. It's effortless. And where I need to go next is just obvious. It just kind of comes to mind. So it's coaching from, I guess, what we in the principles world call coaching from wisdom rather than coaching from the intellect. So it's changed completely. And it just feels like this easy, effortless, elegant process that I just watch unfold. I'm almost not even really participating in it. I'm just watching the unfolding of it, just coming from this really quiet place within me.
So people perhaps in the principles where we talk about it, just like wisdom coming, letting the intellect drop and letting wisdom just shine through.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it sounds like now I think you actually use the term effortless. So it's become less hard work. I'm not saying it was hard work for you before, but it just sounded like I heard that much, very much in what you said.
Yeah, I had a lot of personal stories still going on. You know, at the end of the session, I'd be thinking, oh, I didn't really do that right, and I didn't do this right, and maybe I should have said this. And, you know, so I had a lot of that narration still going on, whereas now there's nothing at the end of the... I begin it in peace and I end it in peace. And my clients or people I'm talking to just seem to drop into that peace along with me. It's just effortless. It's just this beautiful space of connection. Completely different to, but, you know, it's what I've heard people speak about and what I thought I was doing. You know, actually now that I've experienced the difference, I can see that I was still very much in my head.
Still
very much an intellectual understanding.
And I'm just reminded there, as you speak about some of the psychologists I've spoke to about this, and they said before, when they used to use the old systems of psychology that they'd perhaps learned in university, they could get very involved and, what's the word, really attached to the outcomes and how they're doing with people and getting into a lot of worry about the clients. And I'm not saying they don't worry about the clients now, but it seems to be a lot more, the more they drop into that space of what you're talking about, the more they seem to help the clients. And at the end of the day, they're not going home exhausted and emotionally drained. They've just, because they've not had to do anything in many ways from an intellectual standpoint. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. And that's exactly it. You know, I was an ex-NLP-er. So I was used to working to model. I was used to working with processes that had a definite outcome and models. And within that, when you're trying to remember all of that, you're kind of not connected because you're in the model, you're not with the client. And as you say, that can become exhausting and you can start berating yourself for not having done the model properly or got the outcome that you wanted for them, or the outcome that they had wanted. So it's a completely different way of just being with a person in stillness.
And please correct me if I'm wrong, and I apologize to people who have got, I don't have a great knowledge of these other models of NLP or other approaches, but it seems to me, well, it doesn't seem to me, it's obvious to me that these understandings and the three principles talks and the non-dual talks and self-inquiry, they go into the very core of who we are, whereas it seems to me a lot of the other modalities that they're just working on improving the intellectual mind. It's probably a very unromantic term came to mind, of like they're working on polishing a turd, which is probably, whereas it's best just to clean that away and get to the essence of who you are, which is very unturd-like. I'm not renowned for my eloquence, Alison. does that make sense, excusing my vulgarity?
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, I'm not claiming to be a great NLP expert, because I know that there are people out there that do amazing things with NLP.
Yes, and I do want to clarify that as well.
The way I think that the level on which I was doing NLP, I was looking at changing people's behaviours and belief systems and values. So it was there was still a strong sense of personal identity within that, whereas the non-duality and the inquiry is actually taking you back to who we truly are, and the peace that's available there. So then you don't actually have to manage your thinking, because you know that you are not your thinking.
Yeah, beautiful. So I'm going to throw this at you. We're probably covering this in different angles, but I always find sometimes it can be helpful for coming at the same thing from different angles. So would you like to just talk about that again, about we are not our thinking?
Well, I guess I can give it to you as an example, actually, because what kind of happened next as part of this process for me was that I suddenly became my thinking again. So I'd gone to, having this amazing heart-opening experience and everything. And then I decided, I'm going to reinvent myself now and redesign my life, because I've got this neutral canvas. Mm. And so there I was, back in my thinking and managing my life and controlling it and all of that kind of thing. And I decided what I was going to do, because I was kind of in this place of not knowing what to do quite, whether to move or whether to stay in Glastonbury or whether to continue coaching, or what. I just didn't know really what I was going to do. Mm. So this doer popped from this place of neutrality that I found myself in. She started reinventing me again. Mm. And she decided that she was going to follow a certain course of action, and that was going to be her future, and that that meant this and that meant that. So I'd started again to manipulate thoughts into creating outcomes.
Hmm.
And then I was Skyping with the non-dual teacher again, and he pointed out to me exactly what I was doing. And when he pointed it out, his words were so deep with me, it was literally silenced. And I mean silenced. It was like there was this big empty void in my mind where she had lived for all of these years, my entire life, guiding me and directing me and trying to control life so that I felt safe, all motivated really towards feeling safe and secure, and security was kind of a big part of it. And she'd just gone. She'd just completely gone, and the silence was almost deafening of where she was, where she had been.
Mm.
And that was a really useful kind of insight, really, for me, because I had just popped up again, trying to get control again, rather than just allowing the perfection to unfold. And so I'd kind of witnessed what had been going on. And I was separating in and out of feeling no separation, and that I was at one with everything. And it was really curious, because it was like everybody that, when I was in that place, it was like everybody that I was speaking to was a part of me. And I was hearing everything in metaphor, because it was like having conversations with myself all of the time. And then I'd slip out of that and go back into personal self.
Right.
And I have this days of roller coaster where I was getting so angry and so frustrated with myself, because it seemed like I couldn't hold this place. And just all of these questions, I'd come up with a question. Right. And then I'd get angry with myself because I couldn't answer the question. And it was like I had this ring and runaway boy in my head creating havoc in my head.
Yeah.
And I got to the point one night where I literally wanted to rip my own head off, because it was so full of thoughts that I was believing in, and I knew better than this. And that kind of made it worse, because here I was as this three principles coach. I know not to believe in my own thinking, but here I am believing in all of it, and my ego was just fighting to survive, and it was just kind of telling me who I was and who I wasn't, and yeah, it was just weird. I was in this place where I was kind of half awake and half asleep, and just feeling so unbelievably lonely, as if I was never able to relate to the world of form again in the same way, and that I'd never be able to be around people who couldn't see things as I saw them. I don't know if you've experienced this, but suddenly everybody just looked like actors. They looked like actors in this play, and all of their personal stories just sounded like noise. I kind of couldn't people actually believe that what they were experiencing was real, and then at the same time I'm believing it, but what I'm experiencing is real.
Yeah.
So it was that real in and out and in and out, and just feeling strangely separate from reality some of the time, and then just feeling amazing at other times. And I started to notice that all of the questions that were coming up for me were questions that normally I would be answering for other people.
Right.
And so I realized in that moment that actually all I needed to do was just to go quiet. And so I then started to spend a lot of time just being really quiet, you know, going back into the meditating and just emptying my mind.
Yeah, I could relate to when you said I don't know if I can you relate to what I'm saying. It just reminded me of what I've said earlier about when I said I couldn't take people's behavior, for example, seriously, or people's dramas seriously. It's kind of seeing that somehow it's just not real until I forget, and then things do seem real, my own stuff or other people's stuff, and you get drawn into it, and then you kind of like, it's kind of like a dropping in and dropping out for me quite often now. I am in life at the moment, but I'm becoming more and more, I seem to be less and less impacted by the ups and downs. It seems to be more of an even keel, an even flowing through life for me. And then, but like saying, there's some days it's not, I'll get caught up in my own little dramas or whatever's going on in life. So I think sometimes when people hear what we're talking about, like you're saying, you're very much, it sounds like now you're, earlier on you talked about, pick me up on my words if I'm not relaying it back to you how you meant it. As I heard very much that you don't have to think, you don't have to let the intellect come in, you can be more in the flow of life. But I think sometimes people think that we just go through life not doing anything. We're almost like a hippie sitting under a tree meditating. But it seems to me that people can still have this understanding and yet lead very productive lives. Just wondering what you'd like to say about that, or what your thoughts on that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It doesn't mean not taking any action. I guess how it feels now is that I'm not the one driving this body, or who I thought I was isn't driving this body. I'm kind of, it feels like I'm sitting in the back seat and just watching life sort of happen, knowing at the same time that I'm, you know, I am part of consciousness that's creating all of it, and none of it's real. So there's nothing to control and actually no effort to be made. I've given up with efforting, but that doesn't mean I don't take action, but it's an action from a different place. So it's not an action from a need to feel secure. It's not, you know, I've got to build my business so that I have enough money so that I can have a house. And, you know, it doesn't come from that place anymore. It comes from what does this feel like it's going to be fun? And if it feels like it's going to be fun, then yes, I'll do it. If it doesn't feel like it's going to be fun, then I won't do it. So there is still an action, but it comes from a different place.
So would you say it's more like you're following your intuition in life more?
Yeah, definitely. And I've never been able to do that. One of the other experiences that I had as part of all of this is that I also do intermittent fasting.
Right.
And one morning I woke up and I was feeling really hungry and I thought, I really want to eat something today. I don't want to fast today. And so I just kind of left that thought alone, went off for my day and I took some food with me. And then I went to, you know, I was thinking, I want to eat something, I'm hungry. And I thought, actually, I'm just going to check in with my body. So I checked in with my body and I wasn't hungry in the slightest. There was no sense of emptiness. I wasn't hungry. And in that moment, I totally got the concept of a narrator running my story and my experiencer, which is kind of my intuition, my body, that knows what it wants. It knows what's right for it. But I'd spent 52 years of not listening to it because I was listening to the voice in my head instead.
Yeah, the shoulds, what you should be doing and shouldn't be doing. Yeah.
Or things based on a need of some kind.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, no, definitely. It's now more about not thinking about whether something's right or not. It's more about feeling my intuition.
And I'm immediately there. I'm reminded of when, in a lot of the personal development field, for example, when I got introduced to it by my partner Sheila, like probably over 10 years ago now, there used to be a lot of talk of modelling on people who were successful. It's like, if you want to have a successful life, look at somebody you really admire and then just copy what they did. But again, there's no room for, like you said, your intuition there. It just may be not what your life path is, you know what I mean, to go down the same route as your financial hero or whatever it may be, you know?
Absolutely. It doesn't allow for life to unfold.
Yeah, and quite often people are just going against the flow all their life, all the time when they're doing such things, aren't they?
Yeah.
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 So somebody's, I think we've probably already pointed to this in many ways, so how would you advise people from your recent awakenings or understandings, would you say, of how do you know when you feel like you're in the flow? I can imagine where you might go with this, but I'd just like to ask you that.
I know now when I'm in the flow, when it just feels effortless and when there's no thinking involved, which is kind of hard to explain because, of course, we do have to think to a point because we still have to function, but it's a felt experience rather than an intellectual experience. And there's just an underlying feeling that comes from this deep place of stillness inside me now, that this is flow, that this is just an unfolding that I am participating in. And it just has this lovely quality to it of stillness. It's just a quieter place. When I'm in that kind of flow state, it's a quieter place. I think that's the best way I can describe it, really.
And throughout centuries, people have been talking about silence and being getting quiet. Most of us just seem to, especially in the Western world, we seem to have very little, there seems to be very little importance giving ourselves such that time to be quiet, isn't there?
Yeah. We're in constant contact with everybody as well. You know, we've got mobile phones, so even when we are on our own, we're never really on our own anymore.
No.
And you know, people tend to go from one relationship to another relationship and don't spend time on their own. So it's rare that we do give ourselves that space and that peace. Or should I say, it's more correct to say to connect with that space and that peace. because it is always available, even if life is happening and life is noisy.
Yeah.
It's more about knowing that that space and that peace exist as well.
Knowing that space exists, Well, listen, I won't keep you much longer. It's been lovely talking to you. I actually finished the conversation that you're listening to now a bit prematurely, and then afterwards I wasn't happy with it. So this is a week later. I'm speaking to Alison again, and I spoke to Alison. I said I wasn't happy how I finished the conversation. I'll be very honest. I got into busy thinking about work towards the very end of the conversation, and then the next thing I heard myself saying to Alison, "Oh, let's. I think it's a good time to finish it there." But afterwards, it really didn't feel that it was a good time to finish it. And I'd spoken to Alison beforehand, and she'd mentioned a few things that have been going on in her life and experiences and insights she'd had. And I realised that we hadn't covered that. So I'm coming back now, and we're just going to add this on to the end of the conversation that you've already been listening to. And we'll see if we can get back into a flow. And I'm feeling a lot quieter now. And I think that's quite interesting for people that when we're, not just in these kind of conversations, but in conversations with our children or our partners, quite often we're not totally present. We might be 50% listening to our partners, and then 50% or our children, and 50% thinking of what we're doing tomorrow or what we've got to do later. So I think it's just good to be aware of that. That happens to everybody, especially me, quite a lot. So hello, anyway. Hello again, Alison.
Hi, Mark.
All right. So, do you think that was clear for people what I just said then?
Yes, definitely. Right. And it does happen to all of us, you know.
And I've never had to do this before. I've had conversations before. I probably could have done it before actually, but I've just really thought about it the day after we spoke the first time, and I thought it just wasn't sitting well with me. So that's when I got back in touch with Alison and said, let's finish off and try finishing off again. So, Alison, I mentioned briefly before, a moment or two ago, that there was another big insight that you mentioned to me before we began the conversation the first time.
Mm.
We're probably starting at the deep end now in many ways, but I'm just wondering, would you like to just talk about that insight that might be interesting and perhaps a bit cosmic for people out there?
Yeah, it was cosmic. I kind of, you know, I'd had all these amazing experiences and wonderful realizations that the personal self doesn't really exist. The me that I thought that I was had kind of completely fallen away. I'd started to understand how I was creating what I saw. So I was the observer, and through observation and perception, I was creating what looks like the life that I live in. So making thought into solid form. And then the ultimate question, well, it seemed like the ultimate question at the time, arose for me, which was, if I'm the observer creating my reality via my personal thinking, who was observing me and making me into form? And so I thought, okay, I'm going to go to quantum physics for this, see if I can find any answers to this.
Mm.
And I stumbled across, completely by chance, this amazing recording, which I think I shared on Facebook at the time.
Mm.
And the guy who I watched, he shared that quantum physics, through what quantum physics has learned, is that at the base of everything is consciousness. And this is very simplified language, so apologies to anybody that knows anything about quantum physics. Basically,
there's a lot of experts out there.
Yeah. Consciousness, within consciousness, there are limitless possibilities. And consciousness chooses from those limitless possibilities, from itself, essentially, to manifest something from nothing. And when I heard that, it kind of answered for me how I was being manifested into physical form to become embodied consciousness.
Mm.
And so the question just drops, you know, it was like, okay, that's been satisfied. I've got peace with that question. I can just drop that now. So I went along to another one of the non-duality groups and we did another meditation. And in the meditation, I dropped my awareness out of the narrator, so the person telling me the story in my head of who I am and what I'm experiencing, and just dropped down into my body. And I got completely blown out of my body. I kind of had this, I'm not going to call it an out-of-body experience because actually I lost any sense of having any body or any personal self. And I kind of, I'd gone galactic. That's how I got it. My consciousness was totally non-local. Perceiving as everything and nothing at the same time. You know, I was kind of up there in the stars. I could see the planets. I was just huge. I know, and I'm saying I, it was my awareness. And then, of course, I was in the room and we were asked to share our experiences. And I was in the room, or my consciousness then kind of came, or consciousness came down kind of smaller and more local at that point. And I could see a candle in front of me, and I knew that it was called a candle, but I was the candle, and I was the furniture, and I was all the other people in the room. And I remember looking down and looking at my hands, and I could see strands of energy coming out of my fingers. And I was looking at my hands as if I'd never seen them before. I couldn't recognize what they were. So, and so.
It was so what? Sorry, Alison, the line went.
Yeah, it was just so deeply peaceful.
Okay, okay.
And so spacious and so quiet. And it was just the most incredible. Just the most incredible sensation. And then the guy running the group asked me what sounded like the most bizarre question I'd ever heard in my life.
Mm.
He said to me, "Does it feel heart-centered?" And I thought, what is a heart? I don't have a heart. I have no body. There is no sense of any body. So I can't find this heart.
Mm.
And then he said, "Do you feel gratitude?" and it was like, does who feel gratitude?
Right.
I had absolutely, completely lost any sense of a personal self and a body in that moment. But the questions kind of brought me back down into embodied consciousness. And I can now see that there's a big difference between experiencing as embodied consciousness and experiencing as consciousness. So that was kind of that experience, and the peace and the tranquility and the security and the serenity that I felt in that moment was so incredible. And for a few days after, I kind of felt like I was sat in the back seat of my body. It felt like my body was a vehicle. I was sat in the back seat, and that actually life was just taking care of itself. There was nothing that I needed to do. There was nothing I needed to worry about. It was just all life happening, life taking care of itself. And I just had this sense that, you know, there is nothing to take seriously. It's all made up. And the peace and the security that I've kind of got from that, you know, I just realized I need nothing. There is nothing that I need. I am complete and I am whole and I could actually sell all of my possessions and just go bobbing around the world if I chose to. And actually, whether I do ever do that or not, and I actually feel quite tempted, but not quite at the moment, but whether I ever do that or not, the fact that I know so deeply that I need nothing and that everything is perfect and that life is taking care of itself, whatever happens is perfection, whatever it looks like, has just kind of left this beautiful place of calm for me. And I'm not saying I live there all the time, because the personal thinking still comes up again. But on the whole, there is just this lovely sense of calm. And I've got no plans for the future. I'm just seeing what unfolds and seeing where life takes me, just feeling more secure than I ever have.
That was lovely, Alison. And I'm reminded of I know it was quite, for some people who are perhaps new to this, it might be a bit, like, say, cosmic or galactic or whatever. but then again, I'm sure there's other people who can relate, even if they don't totally, haven't had as a deeper insight or experience of that. I was just reminded as you were speaking, I had a coffee with a friend of mine yesterday, and we were just, for some reason, he talked about his grandfather, which he was talking about childhood memories, and he mentioned his grandfather, and his grandfather had a lot of heart trouble. And on one particular episode of having an heart attack, he actually, his heart stopped, and he died in the hospital, and they brought him back to life with the electric shock things on the chest.
Yeah.
I'm not so sure of the technical term of those. And after he came round, he'd had basically a near-death experience, or a death experience, whatever they called it. And from that moment on, he was never afraid of death. And it sounded very much like what you talked about there. It's just you suddenly see that, oh, we're identified with this physical form, whereas we're much more than that. And I think you mentioned embodied consciousness and consciousness. And I know people have been trying to talk about this for thousands of years, who've had more experience than you and I. But I was just wondering if you'd like to try and at least try and say what you mean by that, the embodied you mentioned suddenly being reconnected and you came down into embodied consciousness. So could you talk about that?
So how I see that at the moment is it's about density. So the density of the body, so how real the body feels.
Yeah.
It seems to me, and this is only kind of a theory that's come to me in the last few days, actually, but it seems to me to relate to how much of an investment we have in our identity and our ego and our personal self. And when there is no identity and ego and personal self, then there is no density. So then all we are is that spaciousness and the stillness. But as soon as any kind of form of personal identity is grabbed hold of, and complexity to the body comes back, and the consciousness becomes embodied. So
yes.
It's kind of, does that make sense?
That makes, as you speak, I'm reminded of that bloody insight that I always harp on about. It was, whereas I had a, I think it was probably similar to what you've experienced, but mine wasn't as long, if we want to start talking about time, and that's an illusion apparently as well. But I just suddenly realised everything was perfect, and it was a deep knowing. And when I say I, again, I use that term, Lucia, like you mentioned before. But then suddenly there seems to be a questioning of that kind of realization, and that was when I came back, as you, in using your words, into embodied consciousness. It was like there was a vastness of consciousness, and then a wanting to get an intellectual understanding, and that just kind of brought me straight back to where I'd seemingly left.
Did that make sense? So I was in my intellect. The intellect suddenly is almost, to me, I've said this before, it was almost as if my mind stopped for a moment, the personal mind stopped for a moment, and I saw what was beyond it. And but then it, there was almost, I have this image of like somebody dropping the towel in a public place, you know, when they check, and then suddenly they're trying to pull it back up, and it was almost like that was my ego had done that, you know?
Yeah, no, I know exactly what you mean. I call it the interpreter. So you know, having this amazing experience, and a bit like, you know, I was asked these questions, suddenly I was having to interpret the experience.
Yes.
And if as an interpreter, then the personal self is then present, because it's using the only language that we know. So the only language we know are labels for things, like labels for an emotion. So as soon as an emotion is labeled, then it's brought into the human world, the personal thinking, the personal self. Whereas when you're just experiencing and not labeling, then there is less of the personal self there trying to make sense of it.
And like people have been trying to make sense of this for thousands. People have had these experiences and realizations and enlightenment, and then they try to explain it, and usually people are trying to figure it out with the embodied consciousness, which is, I think, in the principles you talk about, trying to grasp this is like trying to fit the fish, the Pacific Ocean into a fishbowl. You know, it's, you can't figure it out. It's just something that it's got to be experienced, isn't it? The more quiet you get, go on.
I was just going to say, there's something that Muji says, which sums it up beautifully for me. He says, before words are spoken, there is the profound silence. And that kind of sums it up, really, that there is the silence, and then we think we need to bring words to it to understand it. But it's all in the silence. That's where the depth and the connection and the wholeness and the oneness and everything you need is there, in that profound silence.
I think it seems to me that the doorway to this metaphorical doorways, because it's evident, very evident to me, when people are talking about being, for example, you was asked if you felt gratitude and did it feel heart centered. I think in many ways when people talk about coming back to your center and coming back to your heart, or in many ways it's just an invitation for people to get quiet. And it seems to me that when people really do get quiet to that place of not being identified with the thinking, then there is the possibility, it's almost like there's a possibility of a doorway opening to something beyond, which it seems to me what you stepped through into for a moment or two, or whatever it was.
Yeah, absolutely. For me, I see it as kind of a veil. So it's something that is always there. Nothing can touch it. At all, but we kind of cast this veil over it where we don't see it and we don't experience it. But and I think, yeah, I think that night the veil was lifted for me somehow, and I was able to have an experience of it.
And this is what I'm intrigued about now as well, is that you talked about, and I'd be interested in that clip, if you could root that clip out, I could perhaps link this to the conversation, the quantum physicist clip.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I will do.
Because I've just been people know I'm very interested in yoga, and a lot of yoga, the Raja Yoga, really points at the very essence of what you've been talking about. And I was reading a book, Patanjali, the Sutras of Patanjali, And that book dates back thousands and thousands of years. I think it's estimated it could be 5,000 years old, if not older.
Mm.
And what they're talking about is very much what you talked about, and what saying that everything's one, everything's just consciousness. And it's so intriguing to me that now physics, or the quantum physics, is actually now backing up what these ancient wise people have been saying for thousands of years. It seems to be like science, in some ways, is finally catching up with the people who were quiet enough to not just keep looking outwards. They looked inwards. Yeah.
They had to go through a lot of noise to get to the quiet.
yeah. They're realizing actually, obviously, there's been some amazing discoveries in science, but the actual bigger things of consciousness are still a mystery in many ways, aren't they?
Mm. It is still a mystery, and you know, even the guy in the video clip, you know, he talks about how to use, you know, the knowledge that quantum physics offers us, whether we use it for creativity or whether we kind of just sit in a cave and meditate for the rest of our lives.
Mm.
So yeah, it's very interesting. I'll send you the link for it.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, now, before I cut you off again, is there anything else you'd like to add to our conversation?
Well, there was kind of another interesting thing that happened this week where I started to notice more and more since having had these experiences that words start coming out of my mouth, and I'm kind of listening curiously as to why I'm saying what I'm saying. So it's not kind of coming from the personal self, it seems to be coming from a deeper place somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And then I might say something and I think, oh, that's interesting, where did that come from? And then the next day, something will kind of show me, something else will happen that will show me why I had said what I said. So it's another kind of really interesting thing about just getting out of our own way sometimes, and you know, not listening to the narration that goes on in the mind, and just kind of speaking from that quieter place.
Yeah, speaking from. Well, I think I mentioned this. Well, you mentioned Muji a minute ago. We talked about when he shares, he says that's basically what he does. He gets out of his way, and then just what needs to come out comes out. You know.
Mm.
And I'm not putting myself in the same camp as Muji, or the same as Muji, but there's been once or twice I've found things coming out of my mouth. Quite often it's just I'm stumbling over my words and this, that and the other, but sometimes stuff comes out and I think, what was that about?
Mm.
And I'm not always sure what it is, and then invariably I'll get a message on, especially if it's been one of these conversations, there'll be somebody will say, oh, that what you said really hit me, and it might not necessarily have been something really clear for me personally, but I felt it was something, I was going to say important is probably the wrong word,
but
it was something fresh, something new that I've not said before. It just wasn't me saying it, and it's touched somebody, or it's lit a spark in somebody, you know. And that's why I love having these conversations, because the people I tend to speak to or I choose to speak to, I feel those are the people that when I listen to them, they're speaking from that place.
Mm.
So it's been lovely speaking to you, Alison. And I'm so glad I decided that I wanted to have this have like another snippet with you. So I think we rounded the conversation off a bit more clear.
It's been great. Thank you so much. I have, you know, because it for as wonderful as it's been, it's also been really scary at times. So hopefully, if anybody's listening to this that, you know, maybe is going through something similar, then hopefully, you know, they might get something from it to know that actually it's wonderful, and that when you move through it, there is just such treasure at the end of it.
Mm. Beautiful. Yeah, because like you said, some people, that they suddenly, they've been in the life and thinking everything was a certain way, and then like they have an experience or an insight like you have, and suddenly everything that was important seems not so important, and it can be quite scary when people have had a lot of time and, invested in things in life, can't he?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, Alison, would you? I know we did it before, but I'll probably edit the last. Well, the last bit will be edited out. So, would you like to give your contact details and how people can get in touch with you?
Yes, definitely. Yeah, if anybody would like to talk to me or get in touch, my email address is alison@alisonheathersutton.co.uk, and my website is the same, it's alisonheathersutton.co.uk.
Lovely. And I hope to meet you in person one of these days, Alison.
Yes. Yeah, definitely.
I'm sure it'll happen.
Sunny Spain, not here in windy, wild, wet England.
Yeah, well, we've got it in our minds. We want to do more and more events over here, and so hopefully we'll see you at an event over here, some form or another.
That would be great. I look forward to it.
Fantastic. Well, speaking of which, I'll just give the Jack Pransky Trek plug. I was actually on speaking to Jack last night on Skype. People who know Dr. Jack Pransky is a Three Principles facilitator, one of the veterans. He's been around this for a long time, and he's going to be trekking with me over here in Spain. So that's like a long weekend in April. So if I think it's the 15th, starting on the 15th. So if anybody's interested in that, give me a shout. I'm not sure. I've got a few interesting people lined up on my next few conversations, but I won't mention them yet because I'm not sure what order they'll be in. So just stay tuned, and if people want to contact me, they can contact me at it's the initials for Ice Cream for the Soul. So it's ic4ts@otmail.com. That's the initials for Ice Cream for the Soul. Or contact me on Facebook, Yoga Mark. So thanks again, everybody, for listening, and thanks again, Alison, and thanks for giving me your time again.
My pleasure. Lovely to speak to you.
All right. I'll speak to you again soon, hopefully.
Yeah. Take care.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you.